Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by friend of the show, friend of me, friend of everybody, really. Like, I've never seen you get into it with anybody on Twitter. Matt Moore of the Action Network. How you doing, bud?
I feel like I've been pretty nice to Lakers fans, and I expect no more petitions to have me removed from this program, as I've been very nice to them overall. I've been very complimentary of them over the last year.
We're such an easy bunch to be nice to.
It's true. As the it's just, you know, I think there's this idea of like, why do Lakers fans get more s than other fan bases? Like, that's a question that some of the reasonable people ask, and it's like, I just try to explain, it's like, imagine that it's like the rich kid in class that has all of the best genes, is awesome at athletics, is top of his class, is usually, and if he's not top, like if he doesn't care, like he gets to cheat and no one calls him out on it, gets away with everything, doesn't have to go to third period at all, drives like a sports car, all of these things. And then sometimes is like, yeah, but why don't I get this other thing? And you're like, you have everything else. Can we have something? That's why, like you say, it's like jealousy. It's not jealousy. It's desperation for some of the crumbs to fall to the other 29 franchises in the NBA.
Yeah, but we were hungry is the thing.
I know that you haven't eaten in 10 days, but that saltine, like I really need it as a palate cleanser. I want to start off the show by just announcing publicly that I've already bet the Los Angeles Lakers to win the 2020 NBA title.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the places we were going to take it to. Kind of surprising, to be honest, that the odds were good enough that you would bet them, or did it matter what the odds were going to be? You just feel like it's going to go in their direction.
Well, okay, so confession, I originally bet the Warriors, and then Klay Thompson got hurt, so I needed to chase very badly.
Yeah.
Because I was getting the Warriors at like 4-1. And so I was like, okay, that's, or maybe it was more than that. It was like 6-1. I was like, yeah, let's go. And then Klay got hurt, and I was like, oh, there goes my money. That's just gone. My money is gone now. And so I was like, well, I needed to go ahead and get this back. Let's just go heavy in. Because I was going to probably put in a position on the Lakers, but I was like, I'm going to want to, like, essentially what I will do is I put in some on the Lakers at plus 250. I will put more in on the Lakers as the season goes on, as they get through like each benchmark and I don't have to worry about LeBron being injured or whatever. I'll put more and more on them. So it's like, I started building a Lakers bankroll now.
Yeah. I think that's smart. So you can get varying prices on it, you know, and maybe if the Lakers go through a down stretch, you know, maybe you can make, you know, get even better odds in that stretch of it. It's interesting here because the Lakers at plus 250. That's not the kind of odds I would personally want to bet on. I just don't think that the value is necessarily there, even if I think the Lakers are going to win a championship, which was like why I framed the question that way is at some point, if you just think they're going to win a championship, it almost doesn't matter what odds you're getting if you're that kind of confident in that outcome.
I mean, like there's the chance that the Lakers don't take the regular season seriously, which is like, I think that's a reasonable expectation.
Yeah, I think that's
that they fall to like a 4 or 5 seed, and that by the time that the playoffs come around, we're likely to have fans back in the stadiums. Mm-hmm. And so that actually matters again. And so if they're like a 3 or a 4 seed, I think 5 is probably a little bit much, but if they're like a 3 or a 4 seed, it's possible their numbers are going into the playoffs or something, either slightly longer, like 275, 300, mm-hmm. Or around there. I just, from where I was at, the risk was not enough to get me off of plus 250. Like, you're basically just worried about injury. And I'm of the opinion that like they can sustain an injury to anyone except LeBron. Mm. Anyone except LeBron, and I'd probably still like them to win the title.
Maybe said that last year. I don't know if I feel that way about this year's team. I think they need Anthony Davis more defensively than last year's team needed him defensively.
That's true, but I also think that the additions that they brought in offensively probably make up for that. Like, their offense should be at least passable now versus as it was. It was pretty gross in the regular season. Now, I still liked them all year, but their offense should be better. Mm-hmm. And then defensively, I just tend to believe that these things are systemic. And also, like, I have a lot of, like, very specific data points of that Davis is... The word overrated is probably a bit much because it would imply that he's not that good, and he is, but he's described as like defensive player of the year, the most impactful defensive player. And like, I don't feel that he was that last year for the Lakers in their defensive scheme based off of very specific things like his ability to hedge on the perimeter, his ability to handle space. A lot of it was like, a lot of the things that would be vulnerabilities for him were covered by Dwight and JaVale's raw size and length. And like, you would never say like Anthony Davis needed Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee, but the specific things that they did, like their bad things were fine because of how good AD is everything else. And the very, very, very few specific nitpicky things that AD is sometimes struggles with, they would cover for. That's not there anymore. And I think that that's relevant. But I also just think that I trust Frank Vogel's systemic defense enough to be like, they're going to be great defensively. And I got no reason to think that Anthony Davis isn't going to be healthy the whole season. I got no, like, he has an injury history of small, nagging, annoying things. He does not
have. He limps a lot. He gets up from the floor, falls down. Like, really kind of old. And
he always falls down. He falls down a ton. I wrote a whole thing about how much he falls down. Mm-hmm. But he tends to stay in the game or come back to the game, actually, is more what he does. So I don't have any sort of real reason to get that. And so if I look at that compared to everybody else, I also think there's a scenario where they enter the playoffs as a 2 seed and they're still the favorites at like -125. So I didn't want to, I wanted to go ahead and make sure I got them at a plus number.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was the key. It was like getting them at any kind of plus number you can get is basically how I would have bet them. The defense thing, the AD defense thing, like, this is where I think we really fall short on defensive statistics. Cause like our boss, I guess, was like talking about how AD, the Lakers were better with him defensively off than on or something like that. And it was just like, yeah, but that's lacking a ton of context. When LeBron went off the court, you're talking about Rajon Rondo being out there, and you're talking about Kyle Kuzma being out there, and you're talking about, I guess Dwight would be out there some, but if AD was ever at the five in some of those smaller lineups, or if it was JaVale out there, JaVale wasn't particularly great defensively. And so like, I think this is where I wish we would do a little bit more digging than like, well, yeah, but look at his defensive rating.
Okay. But this is my counter to that. Okay. Is people take defensive rating as an indication of individual defense, and it's not. Mm-hmm. It's an indication. The best way I've found to describe it is, instead of focusing in on what it means for a player, ask this question. Did it work? Did this combination of players work? Mm-hmm. And the reality is that with the Lakers, it worked, but it didn't work as well. It didn't work as well. And so but the question is,
as well as what? As well as your expectations with Rondo on the court? Because you can't be expecting very much in those.
So here's the problem with that, Anthony, is that if I look at the data with Rondo on the court and LeBron, their defensive rating was better than with AD on the court. So if it's Rondo and Rondo sucks, why is it that Rondo was good with LeBron?
Is how much of those minutes are with Rondo, LeBron, and AD?
There was a healthy sample of both. Like, I went into the numbers, and this was the big takeaway, was like AD is not good if Rondo and LeBron are not on the floor. The defensive rating, the team's defensive rating was not good. Mm-hmm. The defensive rating with LeBron and Rondo was good. The defensive rating with AD and LeBron was good. The defensive rating for AD without LeBron and Rondo was not good. So this is the problem, is if you're like, yeah, but that was with Rondo, except like, even if you want to say Rondo is not a good defender in the regular season at this point, which I think is a fair assessment, it still worked better when he was on the floor with LeBron and it didn't work when he wasn't on the floor with AD. So why? And it's not because AD is not good. He's excellent. It's a matter, we're talking about degrees of excellence here. Like that's mm-hmm. that's the big key here, is we're talking about degrees of excellence, okay? Mm-hmm. And there are things that you can actually look at and point to. Like a lot of it, honestly, if you want to circle in on a player, it's Kuzma. Like AD spent a lot of minutes with Kuzma. And in those minutes, the defense went to absolute garbage. The problem with being like, yeah, but it was Kuzma, is you then have to say like, okay, but if I put Rudy Gobert, or if I put Giannis Antetokounmpo, or if I put any of the other, or Ben Simmons, who is my personal defensive player of the year, if I put that guy on the floor with anybody, their defensive impact is good enough for them to be okay. But with AD, it's a little bit different because of the specific role and way that AD plays defense. Again, this is not to say that AD is not a good defender, because AD is in the top 99th percentile of all defenders. He mm-hmm. is incredible. Especially in the playoffs. Like, here's the big takeaway is like, we can look at the regular season all we want. There's nothing I can say about AD in the playoffs. He was everything he was billed as in the playoffs. He shot incredibly from three, which was literally the difference maker in them going to five games in each series versus six or seven. He was incredible in bouncing back from poor performances, specifically rebounding. He was durable. Like, AD was everything touted at. Like, that was a sublime playoff performance from Anthony Davis. However, I could just tell you that all of the very easy answers that people go to, and they're like, oh, the defensive metrics don't mean anything. Like, they don't even look at the Rondo stuff.
I never said it didn't mean anything. I just think we need to add more to them than just the defensive metrics.
I agree, but that's why, like, I'm telling you, my thing was based on, I went into, okay, I'm going to make the case, like, I'm going to do some film research and look at Anthony Davis as a potential defensive player of the year to see whether there's a value embedding this. Mm-hmm. And instead, like, what I found was like, that's weird. He gave up the corner there. That's weird. That's a pretty bad closeout. Like, somebody wasn't, not bad. And you can make the argument that I'm looking for negative things and finding things to nitpick. I think that that's probably, like, the confirmation bias risk there is probably significant, because I'm always looking for, if the data is telling me something, I'm mm-hmm. always trying to find the reason why my eye test doesn't match the data, or why the common consensus doesn't match it. I'm also always trying to do the opposite, which is like, if I'm like, I see this and I know this is real, but the data doesn't tell me so, I dig into the data to be like, oh, it's this other thing. Like, it's this other thing that's causing that. There's like a nexus that you have to find between the two. You have to find some way to be able to calibrate. The answer is not to just be like, defensive metrics suck and we don't need to pay attention to them. The answer is you need to look for more answers, more complete answers to these questions than the simplistic Anthony, the Lakers defensive rating was worse with Anthony Davis on the floor, therefore Anthony Davis isn't that good of a defender. That's ludicrous. Mm-hmm. Like, that's ludicrous. But the defensive metrics don't mean anything. Anthony Davis is the defensive player of the year because I watched it. That's also ludicrous. They're both ludicrous arguments.
I would say that's fair, because both arguments lack a lot of nuance. And the fact of the matter is, defense is played with a ton of nuance. Like, if you're talking about AD at the five, and this is what worries me about the defense this year, is that, like, AD at the five lineups, like, if he's going to play with Montrezl Harrell, then those things that AD isn't the best at, right, the physicality inside, he's good as a player who rotates over to defend somebody at the rim, but if you're, like, asking him to stand there and take the physicality and the beating that comes with being more of a stationary rim defender, that's not something he's very good at, and it's not something that, like, he's very comfortable at. And so, you know, when I think those Kuzma lineups, for example, if Kuzma is playing the four and he's at the five, like, you're asking, you have a bad perimeter defender who's sending people to the rim to somebody in Anthony Davis who isn't comfortable with that type of rim defense. And so, like, I'd have theories on all of that stuff. I just, you know, my original point on the AD defense thing is to your point, and it's and I think we both agree that on both ends of the spectrum, you make really dumb arguments. It's trying to find that middle understanding of what else might be going on there. This isn't where I plan on taking the show.
I hijacked your show because that's what I do, Anthony. I'm not here to cater to your Lakers agenda.
Well, there's going to be a little bit of Lakers exceptionalism, because, like, in the hour before you and I recorded, LeBron James decided to extend his stay in Los Angeles. He's gonna brave those difficult Hollywood nights for two more years. So we got to talk about that. There's still plenty to get to about the offseason that the Lakers had. I'm interested in it. It's been somewhat polarizing, not polarizing in that, like, I've heard people argue about that. It more polarizing in that, like, I feel one way about it and the consensus is another way. And I want to see where you're at on that. So plenty of stuff to get to. Hang tight. We'll come back here in a bit with the internet's favorite person. What's funny is, like, the internet's favorite person thing is the thing that people say when I go on their shows too. So this is like the one time where I get to say that to somebody else. But all right, let's get into the LeBron extension here. Now, immediately the talk was, well, this takes away from their ability to sign Giannis outright. I would normally think that way. I think over the last couple of years, I've kind of altered course in regards to that reaction, because every time a star says they want to go somewhere and that team needs to clear cap for that star to be able to go somewhere, we somehow find some crazy clause or sign and trade deal that somehow makes it work. So I wasn't really worried about that at all. I was just mostly excited that, yeah, the best player in the world has decided to opt in for two more years.
Yeah, we can talk about Giannis in a minute. I mean, I think I'm not surprised, just given that it was kind of weird that he started, that his initial contract was I understood why he did the years that he did on it, but it also, like, he basically lost last year. So it makes a lot of sense for him to be like, okay, we have the winning combination. I do like it here. I'm going to go ahead and stick around. And I think that, you know, like, winning a title makes you more invested. Like, I just think this is one of the reasons why whenever I'm hoping that a player will stay in a place, like, this is why it sucks that the Bucks keep losing in the playoffs, is like, for even if you're just like, well, it's because they're flawed and they don't take care of him and they didn't pay for Malcolm Brogdon, blah, blah, blah. Regardless, like, if Giannis wins a title with the Bucks, he's going to be like, this is awesome. I love this feeling. This is so great. I love these teammates. This organization is so great. I'm staying. And then without it, it's like, I really want to win a title. What do I have to do to win a title? Where do I go to win a title? And so, like, it makes a lot of sense to extend in those places. It's why I continue to, I always wonder if in 2014, if they've been able to just not, like, if LeBron doesn't get cramps in that first game, and they beat the Spurs, because that series was closer than it kind of looks on paper towards the end of it, because they just let go of the rope. Mm-hmm. What happens if LeBron's like, you know, I just repeated here. I've three-peated. Like, I want to see how many I can get here. This organization is what's best for me. If he stays, if he goes back to Cleveland, et cetera. I just think it's really hard to leave a place after you win a title. It always made sense because, like, his business is booming in terms of all of the things that he's gotten his hand in terms of media production and everything else. It makes financial sense. The family obviously likes living in LA, being extremely rich and famous, one of the most famous people in the world. LA is a great place to live. Where else is he going to go, really? And I think it also kind of shows, like, the Lakers also, because of the Anthony Davis thing, like, he couldn't pull off the Anthony Davis thing in Cleveland. Couldn't do it. Just not how it works. And so I think he kind of knows that, like, even if they were to hit a hiccup or something were to go wrong, the Lakers could just make another move, like Giannis or whatever else, and add more help, because he's got a legit chance now. Getting the fourth one, he's like, he can see it. Like, just two more titles, and he's caught him. And I think that's, you know, this gives him, if he wins two of the next three, he's caught him. And that pretty much calls it. With the finals appearances, the stats, he'll probably wind up passing Kareem for all-time points. Even with the losses in the finals, matching him in rings, the statistical production, finishing with more points, his impact on the game, that probably gets him home in enough people's minds for him to be able to walk. But yeah, I mean, I think, look, it's a credit to what the Lakers have done in building an organization that is so good at catering to whatever he wants, that letting Rich Paul run the team. I think that that's helpful. Like they own the Lakers. It's not a bad thing to own the Lakers without having to pay any of the bills. So it's a sign of what the Lakers have given him and what LA has given him. And I think it's really cool that, you know, he gets to make these decisions and probably has a real chance at getting six.
I think so. The other players aspect of this, well, I want to talk about that later, because like one of the knocks previously with LeBron was, you know, stars didn't want to go to Cleveland when he was on those 1+1 deals and be stuck there in Cleveland without him. That, you know, is not something that teams are going to be as, or players are going to be as nervous about now, right, that he's under contract for at least, what is it, 3 more years. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's an interesting thing that I want to talk about later, but, you know, you talked about the way that the Lakers have treated LeBron or the partnership that they've developed with LeBron. And the other story that like was across Twitter today was how those same efforts that the Clippers are making with Kawhi are rubbing other players and some staffers the wrong way with some of his demands and some of the things that they were doing for him. And like, without getting into, you know, crapping on the Clippers, which I'm always usually up for, but because of the juxtaposition of the two situations right now, I'm really kind of interested in like, why do you think it is that what the Clippers are doing for Kawhi pisses people off, and the stuff that the Lakers are doing for LeBron and Clutch don't seem to be treated the same way? Is it just the winning? Is it that a lot of these guys are clutch, and because of that, there's an extra connection that these guys have that the Clippers teammates don't necessarily have? Is it just the demands themselves? Do you have a theory on what's going on in the Clippers organization compared to the situation with the Lakers?
I think there's probably three components. The first is that LeBron wasn't always viewed the way that he is now. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of resentfulness towards him from like LA favorite and LA's favorite son, Paul Pierce, being like a big fan of him. Like Pierce had a lot of problems with the fact that he was anointed, and LeBron always carried himself as a megastar. Like LeBron has never, like he's never had what most people would call a normal life. He went from living in his car with his mom to being one of the most recognizable forces in the sports world immediately. Mm-hmm. He had Nike commercials at 18. Like
I remember his high school team went on a national tour.
Yeah.
To play teams throughout the country. They came and I watched some play against Mater Dei.
Yeah, me too. I've watched one high school game in my entire life.
We were and in the building together?
I wasn't in the building, but okay. I'm saying like I watched on national TV. Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of it, is that LeBron is just like a bigger deal. It's not even about the quality of player. It's about like he is a massively just larger individual now. Mm-hmm. Because he's LeBron James. Mm-hmm. Kawhi's like an excellent basketball player. That's who Kawhi is. LeBron James is a force of human nature.
Yeah.
And they're just entirely different. The second thing I think has to do with LeBron learned how to wield that power. And he learned it specifically in Miami, and he carried enough of those lessons. Now, look, like that stuff still continues. I still think it creates a negative environment a lot of the time. Like, I think the Cavs catered to him too much, and it caused, like, I think careers have been damaged by that, because LeBron has people that he trusts and people that he prefers and people that he doesn't. Like, mm-hmm. LeBron's always trusted and believed in J.R. Smith. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but he does. Like, that's just like a thing. Uh-huh. And he was the beneficiary of that, and Iman Shumpert was not. And that was a thing in Cleveland. Like, there are people that have been damaged by it, but in general, LeBron learned how to wield power better. He knows how to wield it in such a way where it becomes more across as this guy's in charge and he's going to give back to you. And that leads into the third thing, which is like, LeBron's an excellent teammate. In Cleveland, they did like the pictures posing and like he was just super involved in teammates. I do this because the psychological side of sport and identifying with the persona we have of athletes is interesting to me. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know LeBron. I'm never going to know LeBron. I don't think anyone really does. I think it's mm-hmm. impossible unless you are actually in the inner circle to know him. We have the public persona. But what I will say is like his life has been public enough that we have perceptions of him. And one of the perceptions that I have of him is like the guy didn't have a family. It was just him and his mom. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways that, and this goes back to More Than a Game and the documentary about his high school team, like his teams have always been a supplemental family to him. Mm. And so like, he's really engaged with them. He cares about them. He's involved with them. Like he's into all he's into the sporting life, the culture of locker rooms mm-hmm. that matters to him. Kawhi is just a dude that's there. He shows up, he does his job, he goes home, and he refuses to give any more than that. And yeah. I don't think you can do that. I just don't.
Yeah, like, I saw you make the point that like LeBron seems to legitimately like people, whereas yes. I've never seen Kawhi, and like you said a second ago, we don't know either of these guys, right?
Right.
We only know about them what we hear about them and what we see on TV, or if we ever interact with them. But just from what I've watched, like LeBron does have his crew. Like the guys, especially that are with Clutch, like they are like brothers. They are close friends, you know. And I don't know if you can call anybody, even tangentially related to Kawhi Leonard that isn't directly related to him a friend. I don't know that you'll hear people, oh, you know, he's close with so and so, and he's close with so and so. Like the image I'll always remember is Paul George is like, has his head down and he's having one of his playoff P moments. And Kawhi's just looking at him like, are you for real right now? You know, and that like, and now LeBron has had those moments too, but not with guys that he likes, or like you said earlier about J.R. Smith that he trusts.
He forgave J.R. after game one, 2018, still got him back on the Lakers.
Yeah.
Find someone who cares about you the way LeBron cares about JR.
I'm trying.
But like,
I'm trying.
Like this has been my thing, and I've been on this. Like I've written about this several times at Action. I don't like the blaming P for this stuff. I don't like blaming Paul George for this stuff. Like
what's that?
Paul George is not the guy. Like the Clippers got Paul George because it's like, oh, this is awesome. We get Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. This is great. But they also got it because like, if we get Paul George, then we get Kawhi.
Mm-hmm.
Kawhi is the guy. Kawhi is in charge. Kawhi is mm-hmm. responsible.
Like, but I don't think he can be. I think
culture is
going to suck if he's your guy.
Just because Kawhi is not the guy that he needs to be, that doesn't mean that we automatically should shift it and put it on George.
Yeah.
And like, even in the article you saw that where guys are like, yeah, but he hasn't backed it up. And I wrote an entire thing. I said this several times during the playoffs. And then it's one of the reasons I took the Nuggets. It's why I said, like, I don't trust him in game 7. Mm-hmm. Kawhi is overstated. He's not overrated. He's overstated. Hmm. The man won with the Spurs as part of a collective unit. He won finals MVP for his defense on LeBron. Mm-hmm. Okay. In 2014, that title team, okay, was mostly Tony Parker and the incredible shooting of guys like Danny Green, Boris Diaw, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's one title. That's one title that he won. Okay. Mm-hmm. He goes and he becomes the best player, and the Spurs are knocked out in the first round in 2015. In 2016, he was incredible, phenomenal, unbelievable, knocked out in the Western Conference Finals. The injury, that one, like you can completely give him a pass. That's fine. He vanishes.
Yeah.
He vanishes. Right. And this entire, and you can, the injury, whatever else. All this stuff happens, and we can, like, that's for a Locked On Spurs sometime. But then he's tacked on to this Raptors team. He makes a 4 bouncer after shooting terribly in the second half of game 7 versus the Sixers. Shoots horribly, gets a 4 bouncer. Okay.
Yeah.
Gets past the Bucks because the, like, Fred VanVleet, and then beats the Warriors without Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson. And now all of a sudden, Kawhi is a stone cold killer you can always count on.
Yeah.
Like Kawhi Leonard's an incredible basketball player. He's the most versatile offensive player in the league. There is no set you can put him in that he's not brutally efficient to the point of just like breaking people's backs. Mm-hmm. But as far as a leader, a force in nature, a guy that drives a team, a guy that does everything, and a guy that has come up in the biggest moments, he's wildly overstated. And LeBron's not. LeBron is accurately described. The man has chosen one on his back. He put chosen one on his back and has lived up to it. No one has ever put the standards as high for their own professional career as LeBron James did and reached it. And he's surpassed it. It's incredible.
Yeah, I regret putting chosen one on my back, I got to say. Like it hasn't worked out. You know, I go places like
consolation choice.
Like the other guy, chosen pun, like is what it should have been. Let's take another quick second here. When we come back, I want to get back to the Lakers and discuss the offseason that they have and see how you feel about it. All right, so the Lakers won last year with an identity of LeBron and AD. LeBron mostly is going to handle the offensive stuff. The role players around LeBron and AD just defend your butts off, and we will use that defense to get out in transition to make up for the shortcomings that we have in the half court. And when they really put the clamps down and they really got out to the three-point line and ran teams off the three-point line or made those shooters uncomfortable, and also like just physically wore down people with like Dwight and presences like that, it allowed them to get out in transition and look pretty suffocating at times. And I thought that heading into this year, they would roll with a similar identity, because that's usually what championship teams do, is they don't usually recreate the wheel, but the Lakers seem to have. Like, this is a very different team. This is a team that is going to be significantly better in the half court, maybe significantly worse on defense, though. So I'm wondering how you feel about the offseason that the Lakers had. Are you in the camp of the best team in the league, just got better, took longer strides forward than everybody else in the league, or are you in the camp of, well, we got to actually see how this plays out before we're willing to go that far about it?
I put my money where my mouth is.
That's a good point. But you did that. Like, would you have done that if not for the Warriors bet falling on its face?
Yeah, I still would have.
Okay.
Yeah, I was still planning on getting it, because like I did an entire thing that basically says like this is the most insane stat about the Lakers' dominance since 2000. If you just bet on the Lakers to win the title every single season, despite them going through their worst stretch in franchise history, mm-hmm. you'd still be, if you bet $100 every single year, you'd still be up like $600. Like,
you know, I've done that and I've enjoyed this.
Just bet the Lakers every single season in the NBA and it'll work out for you. Over the long haul, you will profit. That's not serious betting advice. This is my thing. I mentioned earlier that the defense is systemic, and we tend to give players a lot more credit for systemic defense than we need to. Mm. We've seen examples in the past of teams with questionable defensive personnel become good defensive teams. Mm-hmm. And we've seen examples of teams with great defensive personnel be completely limited. The Clippers had all sorts of great defensive personnel. That was the big like talking point for them, right?
It was
how are you going to score when it's Pat Bev and Paul George and Kawhi? And it's like, well, if they're going to drop the big on every play, you're going to score pretty easy, it turns out, because you can't do that in the playoffs and survive against the quality of off-ball scorers that they have. Now, I think, look, is Trez a defensive downgrade from Dwight and JaVale? Yes. Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty identifiable. Do I have confidence that Vogel will figure out how to compensate for it? Yeah, I do. I think it'll be fine. I think overall their defense, because like a lot of it's like, look, if you have great perimeter contain and the Lakers have great perimeter contain, there's not as much pressure on the interior. If you have great interior defense, there's not as much pressure on the perimeter guys. But they lost Rondo, sure. Schroeder is, in my opinion, a really good defensive guard. He gets up under dudes, especially when he's engaged. Like, this is a lot of it is like Schroeder's attention to detail wafts and wanes with how much he's engaged. He has an opportunity to get heavy minutes, heavy opportunities, handle the ball a lot, be the type of player that he thinks he is. And then and also it's like the moments where he has to defer, he's not deferring to Jeff Teague or Paul Millsap or Al Horford or Kyle Korver or a system. He's deferring to LeBron and Anthony Davis. And like, that's just different. And so I think especially defensively, he'll be engaged and locked in and really compete. We know Caruso's great. Like, we know he's just a great defender. He's just a pest. He's pesky. I can't look at the Lakers roster and outside of Kuzma, it's like Kuzma and Harrell lineups. Sure. Like the Kuzma Harrell lineups may get absolutely annihilated defensively. I expect them to put up a 111 offensive rating. Schroeder helps with their perimeter shooting. That's going to help. I think KCP has probably found his confidence level and can continue to be the shooter. I think they'll probably shoot more threes this year. I'm hopeful that they do. That's like a big key is like we and I've talked about this. They were just awesome at bombing threes in the playoffs. Keep doing that. Like just if you just throw up a number of them with the quality of shooters that you have, you're going to generate enough to be able to hit at a pretty decent percentage. I expect Anthony Davis to go back to being human from three, but overall, like you have enough scores. So I think you'll have a little bit more balance. And I think that's actually probably good for them. It'll help them. Cause one of the things is like, they didn't have as many double digit wins as some of the other teams in the league, like the Celtics, the Clippers, the Bucks, and one other team I'm forgetting had more double digit wins than they did. I expect them to have more this season because their offense will not be, they won't have to win dogfights every single night. They won't be in these wrestling matches every single night. They can still do that, but I think that they can have nights where they just put up enough points, create separation, and coast a little bit.
The pickup that really kind of caught my attention, obviously, like Harrell was the big one. And to me, like what's going to decide the ceiling on the team is how well he and Davis are and how successful those lineups are. But the acquisition that really kind of excited me, not just because it means the Lakers have Gasol on one of the Gasol brothers on their roster, maybe two. I'm still holding out hope. But Mark being able to distribute from the elbow the way that he can, being able to spread the floor in ways that Dwight and JaVale couldn't last year, and just generally doing Marc Gasol things, like I'm really excited to see that on a LeBron team. Like it's one of the more, you know, intoxicating combinations that the Lakers have on their roster is what it's going to look like when LeBron and Gasol are out there doing super like intelligent basketball things together.
I would imagine Mark's going to be divisive for Lakers fans with where he's at in his age.
Yeah, I think you need to keep that in mind for sure.
I think your various unnamed co-hosts of this show will likely love him and notice all the little things that he does that are so smart and the ways that he's able to find angles or bends the defense or understands defensive spacing and offensive spacing and like just the screens that he'll set. The little things that he'll do to complement the team will seem very, very key. I think that much of Lakers Twitter is probably going to be annoyed because he has never been comfortable shooting threes. It's not a thing Mark loves. It's just not a thing that he loves. He understands that it's part of what he has to do now. But even in Toronto, they had a lot of frustration with the fact that he would record scratch on threes. For bigs, a lot of it is like it's a comfort level that's very arbitrary in terms of like it's just subjective about how they feel about that particular shot. Jokic is like this, where it's like Jokic has wide open threes, but just even though he caught it in rhythm, it just something was off, and so he passes it up. Marcus is just I've written on Marcus all more than probably any player in the league outside of Harden and LeBron because I've just done it for so long. The big thing with Mark is that he will always pass up a good look for a great one. And he'll pass up good opportunities for if he thinks that there's a better opportunity for him, for the team. And so like, but he'll do like a lot of the stuff and there will be nights where he's just incredible. And then there's going to be nights when he looks old because he's old now and it's hard. So, you know, I think one thing that is probably underrated is everyone talks about the Trez lineups. I think you can also roll out some Trez Gasol lineups and they'll be pretty good. Like a lot of what Mark can do, he can cover for some of Trez, depending on, because there's going to be more big ball lineups. Like you've noted this on Twitter, the teams definitely were like, we got to get some size to deal with the Lakers. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to have to deal with more big lineups than before. And you can, I think, get away with some of those combinations. But if Trez is unplayable, Mark gives you a player that he won't do much, but he won't cost you. There will never be a situation in which Mark is like a minus 10 consistently in this playoff series every night where you're just getting killed when he's on the floor. You can't exploit Marc Gasol. You can win those minutes by a small number, mm-hmm. depending on who you put around him. But he is so smart and good and fundamentally, his instincts are so great about the game. His understanding of it is so high that he will just finally make your, like Paul Millsap's this way for the Nuggets. Mm-hmm. As much as everybody's like, he sucks, he can't shoot threes, he's old, he's slow. The Nuggets numbers with Millsap are always great because he knows how to play the game.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like the thing that I watch with Mark is that as it's happening, he knows how he's being taken advantage of. And he generally does a pretty good job of adjusting to it. I can't wait. This is going to be, COVID aside, because like, as we're already seeing, I think the Warriors had to postpone their camp by a day or something like that. Practice times by a day. Luka was asked who's going to win a championship. And he said, whoever deals with COVID the best or something along those lines. So we'll see how all that goes, but I'm really excited about the fact that we're like 20 days away from opening night.
I want to ask you about the Giannis thing
before we go.
So okay. I think your point that when a player says, I want to go to the Lakers, mm-hmm. it tends to happen and you can just jettison everyone off for nothing. Hey, we'll take a second round pick. We'll take the rights to whoever and mm-hmm. a conditional second rounder and money and we'll pay you for it. And teams will be like, ah, that's fine. Mm-hmm. So you can usually clear the money that way. I think this probably just becomes a little bit harder to make work just based around if you're Giannis and especially if you're AD. Like if you're AD mm-hmm. and you're thinking like LeBron's going to go on and I'm going to carry the legacy forward, what does adding Giannis do?
It definitely takes a lot of attention away. You know, it absolutely does. I've honestly like... You had to talk about the Giannis thing because he's Giannis, but I've never really seen the fit there for the exact stuff that you're talking about. It's like I've never seen Giannis as somebody who wanted to play with LeBron for that reason. I've never, if AD has been kind of promised like, all right, you're going to be the face of the Lakers moving forward. Also, by the way, we're going to go get this other guy who's kind of sort of going to be our face. I'm not sure how that's really going to work out, but like, crazier things have happened. And, yeah. You know, if we do reach that point where Giannis just says, you know what, screw it, I'll be number two or I'll be 2A or whatever. And AD, I'll just make you look better. And I want to force my way to the Lakers. Those things just kind of tend to work out. The one thing I will say, I think is the biggest factor in the LeBron extension here is that, like any player who has any interest in playing for the Lakers right now knows that they're going to be there likely for the, or knows that LeBron is going to be there for the entirety of their tenure as a Laker, which like, unless you're Giannis, I think is really going to help, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, even then, like it's only three more seasons, right? I mean, we're coming up on 21, we're coming up on 2020. Mm-hmm. Next year will be the 2020-21 season. So you got 1, 2, 3, 4 seasons. Yeah, I guess that's like the full range of it. The other thing I'd say is like, if you're a Lakers fan and you're like, oh, but I wanted Giannis. Here's like a thing is you're probably going to like, I'm just being real. You're probably going to get Giannis. That's you're just point. Probably going to get Giannis after LeBron. Mm-hmm. You're going to go from LeBron and then AD will have his run. And then Giannis will come in because the Lakers will just get like, the best players in the game consistently. And Giannis is still so young. He's a ways from being what he's going to be. you're going to get a better version of Giannis. So he'll probably go somewhere else and maybe win a title. And then eventually be like, yeah, I want to try out LA. And then he'll go be a Laker. So it's like, don't worry. You'll get Giannis. You just may not get him with LeBron and AD. I know that's hard.
You know, it's, I want the filet. I want the lobster. And I want like a really good, what's the third protein? Like I want prime rib too, you know? Why can't I have three of all of them?
The ortolan. Do you know what ortolans are?
No, I don't. What is that?
They're these extremely rare birds. I don't know if they're French or Spanish, but they're cooked. They're tiny and they're cooked. They're basically like fried whole in cuisine. Mm-hmm. And you eat the entire bird. Like the consumption of them is outlawed. I saw this in a Billions episode.
It was in Billions.
But I also heard about, this. I also heard about this in a, I heard about this on like a cooking blog that I read one time, but yeah, it's like the finest food. Everyone else is like, I just want a steak. I just want a steak. And the Lakers are like, no. Look, I know we have the steak and we have the lobster, but this would be great if we had an ortolan on top. That's what being a Lakers fan is like.
Can we get seconds actually also please? Yeah. Except Lakers exceptionalism is alive and well.
Never been stronger, my friend.
Which I'm sure you love. Like I'm sure it's just been a whole bunch of fun.
You know what? It used to bother me, Anthony. And at this point, I came to a point where I've just decided that the NBA is not interested in building the league that I want, and that's a me problem. Like, I want the NBA to be more like the NFL. And the NBA wants the NBA to be more like the Globetrotters League. And it's fine. They've made a lot of money that way. And I still enjoy watching the basketball.
The Globetrotters thing. Is there another team in that league or is it just two?
There was back in the day, there was like a bunch of traveling ones that all got whipped by the Globetrotters.
I'm fine with it. And you can you could even let the young stars coming up play on those other non-Globetrotters teams. Yeah. And then when they're in their primes, they can come play for the Globetrotters.
If there was, I'm watching Ted Lasso, which I love. And it's if there was relegation, I would just cover the relegation league and be totally happy. And just be like, I'm totally good with this. And you can there's going to come. I keep telling Jared Dubin this, my friend. Because he doesn't believe that there's a big market bias in the NBA. Mm-hmm. He's a Knicks fan. And so for him, he's just like, I don't think that there's a big market bias at all. And I'm just like, Jared, you're going to understand this someday. Once the Knicks are not owned by Dolan.
Yeah.
Maybe then you'll understand it.
Then there will.
Or maybe he'll be like a lot of Lakers fans where they're like, there's no big market bias. We're just better. Okay. All right. Sure. See you there.
Yeah, I also believe that we're just better. That's going to do it before Matt punches me through my screen and I keep making these jokes. So thank you very much, Matt, for hopping on. Anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
I've got NBA win total breakdowns team by team coming out probably next week. Awesome. I've written the Lakers one. I'll go ahead and preview it for you. It's a stay away because I don't know how many games LeBron's going to play.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just can't. They're on an 82-game pace. They're under is 54.5. The highest at the books right now is that you can find is if you want to the under, it's 54.5. And I can't take the under. They're too good. I can't take the over. I don't know how many they're gonna play. So it's a stay away, but I will have a breakdown of all the reasons for that, as well as all the other teams. If you want to fade the Clippers, I'll have lots of information on whether or not to fade the Clippers or any of the other teams that you hate. You can check that out at actionnetwork.com.
I don't know how I would bet on this season. Like I got to think about it more, but it's the season is so weird. And of like what we've seen in COVID in the NFL, like I just don't know how anybody really plans on making consistent money in this league.
I'll say this. The COVID concerns are obviously very real now, and they will be very real for the rest of our society for months to come. Mm-hmm. I don't think the NBA will have to be concerned with it very long.
Yeah, I've heard some whispers on that too. I've heard some whispers.
I've heard more than a few whispers. So I think just like, look, deductively, if you're wondering what we're talking about, just deductively, you can assume that the NBA is going to get its hands on the vaccine. Mm-hmm. So
the key is whether MPJ actually takes it.
I just want, like, you can't do this where it's like your team had Dwight Howard and then you're like, oh, but MPJ, I'm a crack joke set.
Well, no. I made a joke on Twitter that the reason Dwight backed out of the deal with the Lakers, or that deal never happened, was because the Lakers wanted him to wear a mask. I make those jokes too.
Yeah. So anyway, there would definitely be issues with the players taking it, but I think we can assume that they'll have access to I feel confident saying the NBA will have access to the vaccine before most of the general public, which is not good, but that's also not the NBA's fault. That's society. That's our federal government's fault. So.
Yeah, I would agree. Well, this was a lot of fun, Matt. Thank you very much for hopping on. Pete and I will be back tomorrow to kick off our player preview series. But for now, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. I'll talk to you tomorrow.